Twitter gets in on stories. AT&T puts a high-tech spin on old-school cable TV. Our police department's testing Terminator-style facial recognition. Plus, your tech questions answered. What is going on? I'm Rich DeMuro, and this is Rich on Tech, the podcast where we talk about the tech stuff I think you should know about. And I answer the questions that you send me. My name is Rich DeMuro, tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Producer Megan cannot be here today, so joining me is producer Bobby.
Hello.
Who has his own podcast.
I do here at KTLA. I'm producing all the podcasts here. Jason's, my own.
Yours is called Spoken Dreams.
Spoken Dreams, yeah.
It's a very exciting podcast. We're going to tell folks more about it a little bit later on in the show. But Bobby, thank you so much for doing this. You are going to read the questions that people have submitted to me.
I am. I'm really excited to be here. I know Megan is like some big shoes to fill on this show, so I'm thrilled.
What do you think is so... why do you think people love podcasts so much? Because you're the podcast producer here. Why do you think they've taken America by storm, or the world, really, when they've been around for so long?
Yeah, I think it's... I think a lot of things in media are cyclical. Podcast to me is almost a return to like radio and that kind of intimacy that you have with radio, especially when people are listening to podcasts through headphones and on their drive to work and on their drive home from work. I think it's kind of an intimate moment. It almost feels like you're spending time with friends when you're putting on your favorite podcast week to week. So I think that's kind of...
In my case, those are my only friends.
Like, right?
I just imagine, I'm like, oh, the guy who does... who's the guy that's married to Kirsten Bell that does like the big...
Oh, Dax Shepard.
Yeah, like I feel like him and I are friends.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
Like, I know Dax Shepard. I know Conan O'Brien. Mm-hmm. All these people that I listen to on a daily basis, like I just feel like I know, and then I'll tweet them, and they'll never tweet me back.
Right, exactly. It's like my real life friends as well, too. Podcast is like the only opportunity I have to talk to people, and people talk back.
It's a one way street,
right.
Though, unfortunately. Yeah. But here is the thing, and people that have emailed me know this: when you email me on the Rich on Tech podcast, I will actually email you back. So people email me all the time, and I respond within 30 seconds because I'm not doing anything else. And they're always surprised. I'm like, why are you surprised? What else do you think I'm doing in my life?
You're go, go, go. It's almost like a second job for you. Is you come into KTLA, you do your work here, and then you go home, and you're still working, and you're talking to people. And
that's it. Well, no one else will talk to me. My friends don't care.
Right.
My wife, like, she doesn't want anything to do with me.
She's like, the more time away.
Yeah, she gets home. She's got, you know, got stuff to do. The kids, they're playing Minecraft.
Right.
But we digress. Let's talk about coronavirus because it is the number one topic in the world right now. And I'm not going to go crazy over coronavirus except to say that I did go to a couple stores yesterday because I was like, let's see if this is really a thing. And sure enough, it is.
Really?
Everything was sold out.
Yeah.
I'm two different stores.
It's crazy. I've been seeing stuff like online and Facebook too. People going to Costco and Target and like no water, no wipes, no... toilet paper, paper towels. It's crazy.
I don't really understand the toilet paper and paper towels, but I mean, I guess you need that stuff. Like generally, you're like, well, if I'm getting all the hand sanitizer in the world, I might as well get this. But yeah, I went to a grocery store. People were pulling the Lysol wipes. They just got a shipment in. As they were putting them on the shelf, people were just pulling them off. Then I went to Target. Entire shelves, like entire aisles empty.
It's wild.
Which was wild. And then on Amazon, I mean, when have you ever lived in a time when you cannot order something you want on Amazon? It's like literally out of stock.
I did not know it extended to Amazon.
Yes, you cannot buy hand sanitizer on Amazon right now.
I knew it started with the masks. Everybody was trying to get the masks, and now it's like end of days, like everyone's crawling into their bomb shelter trying to stock up on things.
It's very odd. I mean, I get it. I get that it's a concern, but it is, I've never seen anything like this. So it's affecting the tech world as well. Major tech conferences have been canceled, including Google I/O, Facebook's F8 event, Mobile World Congress. This is the one that started it all back in February. This was in Barcelona. And according to estimates from the website Recode, they, linked up with a company called Predict HQ, it's so far cost the tech industry $500 million.
Whoa.
And, you know, you think about the travel, the restaurants, all these things, the hotels, airlines. So this was the losses to airlines, hotels, restaurants, and transportation providers. So that's not just like what the companies make on these things. Let's see, what else did they mention that was interesting? The Game Developers Conference, this was scheduled for March. That's been postponed, not 100% canceled. And things that might be on the chopping block are things like South by Southwest, which is happening in Austin. A lot of the big companies have pulled out of that conference, but they still say they're having it. By the time you listen to this, that could be canceled. And then there's one a little bit down the line, but here in Los Angeles, they do what's called E3, which is the big video games conference. That is now kind of up in the air. And Sony, which is a big company, they've pulled out of that a long time ago just because they don't agree with the way the show is going. So they're not going to be there. So maybe it might be a good chance for them to just be like, you know what, let's just regroup next year. And of course, all these major companies like Twitter and Square and Amazon have told either their folks to work at home or to not work at all. No.
Yeah, right.
You know what? Just don't work.
Just don't work. Don't come in.
All right, producer Bobby,
yes.
That is your cue.
Oh,
those are people typing in, busily typing in emails to us.
Ah.
And so that's your cue that it's your turn for the question.
We have some emails that have come through. This first one is from David. David is a huge fan of the podcast and you and producer Megan. So sorry, David, you're stuck with me today, but I will pass the message along to Megan. He's got a question about Pixelbook and MacBook Air. So he's got a daughter. She's starting high school in the fall. She really wants the MacBook Air, but the school is Google-based. So now he's been looking at the Google Pixelbook Go. And he wants to get her a good computer that maybe will last a couple years, maybe her entire high school career. But he comes from an iPhone family, an Apple family. But with everything at the school being Google-based, he thinks that might work out better. So he's trying to figure out what he should do here. And he also mentions that price is no option.
Oh, wow.
Price
okay.
is no concern.
Comes from a good family.
Yes.
So
it's about a difference of $150, $200. So he says it's not a huge concern.
That's interesting because it's not, I feel like Pixelbooks are way cheaper. Maybe he's looking at a high-end Pixelbook. Does he mention if this is for college or high school? Because he says my daughter's just starting school.
Yes, he says high school.
High school.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she'll be there for 4 years.
So my feeling, here's what I think we should do. I think that maybe since the school is Google-based, now, it depends what he says. He's saying Google-based, like, does that mean they use Gmail and, you know, the Google suite of apps? Because
that wasn't particularly specified, but that's what I was wondering, too. I don't know. I mean, when I was in school, there was nothing.
There was slates.
Yeah.
They had a slab that you wrote on with chalk.
Yeah, it was like a chalkboard.
No, you're way younger than I am.
The term Google-based school, I'm not too sure. But my guess, my interpretation was that maybe they're using like Google suite of
Google
Docs.
Yeah.
Google,
which is fine. You can do that on a MacBook. And,
right.
you know, and a lot of these schools use Chromebooks because they're inexpensive, and so that's why many schools have taken to the whole Chromebook thing. And what you're running on, you know, if they are running a Google suite of apps, you can do that on a MacBook, no problem. So here's what I would do. I would see what your daughter wants, number one, because some people are more creative. Like if she's at all inclined to be creative, you probably want to go MacBook, because if she's going to be editing video or working with her pictures in a bigger way than just Google Photos, I think that that lends itself to having a MacBook. And also, maybe she wants to listen to podcasts, or maybe she wants to manage her music. There's many more things you can do on a MacBook than you can do on a Pixelbook. Pixelbook is great if she is only writing papers, if she's only surfing the web, only going on YouTube to watch videos, and that's pretty much it. Now, if you're creating videos for YouTube, go with the MacBook. But that's my recommendation. My bigger plan would be this. If she's not at all inclined to create stuff, then I say go with the Pixelbook for the 4 years she's in high school, then maybe graduate to a MacBook for the 4 years of college. Mm-hmm. And that way you kind of get the best of both worlds, and then she can decide what she sort of likes going forward. Pixelbooks are generally a little bit underpowered and very basic. Mm-hmm. So it's not as flexible as a full-fledged computer. Personally, I'd go with a MacBook. I love the Pixelbooks, but being a creative type, or thinking I'm creative type, I like to have the ability to work with files and work with audio and work with video, and that's kind of what you get when it comes to the Pixelbook versus the Chrome, or sorry, the Chromebook versus the MacBooks. Good first question.
Yeah, what about longevity? Are they both pretty solid?
I think, I mean, a MacBook, you could easily get 4 years out of.
Oh, yeah.
A Pixelbook actually has an expiration date. So if you Google Chromebook end of life, there's actually, for every Chromebook that comes out, Google gives you a date as to when they're going to serve the last software update.
Oh, wow. I did
so
not
pretty
know
much
that.
A death date for that device. And so you can look for any device. Like, let's say you get an Asus Chromebit CS10. The auto update expiration date is November 2020. If you get a Chromebook tablet, CT100 from Asus, August 2023, you have until. Now, does it mean it's going to stop working after that? No, but it's just going to, it may actually, I don't even know, but it definitely stops getting any software updates. Anyway, good first question. Let's talk about Twitter now. Bobby, you're on Twitter?
Sort of, kind of.
Everyone's kind of like,
kind of bailed on Twitter and use it for the podcast. That's it.
It just doesn't resonate as much as a lot of other things. It depends on what you're doing. You know, some people, their only platform is Twitter. Some people, their only platform is Instagram. But it seems to me the bell of the ball right now is Instagram. Mm-hmm. Everyone sort of loves Instagram. Facebook used to have that territory. And Facebook still has the most users, but I see just, you know, in my own data and just from what me and my wife do, we're on Facebook to a much lesser extent. Whereas if I'm at the line at Starbucks, every single person is on Instagram, and especially Instagram stories, which is why Twitter is now testing a new feature called Fleets. These are their brand of Instagram stories. And so it's kind of a story that deletes after 24 hours. And the best way to describe this is it is an Instagram story, except it lives on the Twitter platform, which is great if you're not a big adopter of Instagram and you want to use more Twitter. If you're all on, like we have a guy here, Chris Schauble, one of our anchors, he only uses Twitter. And so this would be perfect for him because you don't want to post necessarily everything to Twitter because it lasts forever. But this is a 24-hour thing. It's ephemeral. It goes away. You can be funnier, you can be short-lived, you can be quirkier, you can post what you're eating, and it doesn't really matter. Now, this does not mean that it's never, you know, people can't screenshot it. It can still be screenshot and all that stuff. And the other thing is that people cannot kind of retweet these, just like a story. They can't like it. All they can do is reply via direct message if you have that feature turned on. And Twitter is testing Fleets in Brazil first. I don't know why they test so many things in Brazil. Happens all the time.
It's weird.
They must have like a large user base of people that are open to new things in Brazil. Yeah. They're like, oh, sure, we'll try this new feature. I think this sounds like a winner, though, because it gives more flexibility to the Twitter platform. And I've actually thought about this myself. I actually think Twitter is the perfect social media platform because if you think about what you can do on Twitter, minus the limitations of how long your tweet can be, you can send links, you can put videos up there, you can put pictures, you can do things that are kind of fun and stupid, you can do things that are long form. It's a great conduit, and by adding the stories, it makes it even more robust. The downside to Twitter is the user base. There just aren't that many users.
Yeah, I was thinking too, like, why this late in the game? This seems like something that, you know, Snapchat was doing for a long time, and then Instagram was doing for a long time, and then Facebook adopted it. Why now?
I think it's money. Yeah. It's can we get more people to use this platform? And I think that the biggest problem with Twitter is it's stalled. It kind of, you have your Twitter users, and a lot of it is journalists, political, media, but the average person, if you go to a high school and you say, hey, are you guys using Twitter? Not really. They're using Instagram or Snapchat.
Yeah.
And so that's a problem for Twitter. They need to grow the next generation of tweeters.
Yeah. Tweeties.
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 Tweety birds.
Okay. I guess that means we get a new question coming in here. This is another one regarding a MacBook Pro. This is from Joni. Joni is another fan of your podcast. She says, I'm getting a new MacBook Pro laptop this week after drenching my MacBook Air with water.
Ouch.
Isn't it an opportunity? Yeah. She's got two of the four elements there. Water, air. She just needs fire and earth. Is it an opportunity to start from scratch and install all my apps and settings manually rather than load the backup from Time Machine? I haven't had any real issues with the computer, but after 7 years, I'm sure there was some garbage on the backup that I don't need or want. What do you think?
I think she hit upon exactly what my advice is going to be here. She has the Time Machine backup, which is fantastic. Always have a backup of your computer. But the reality is she's been using this computer for 7 years. Time Machine on Mac does an amazing job of connecting that device to your new computer, carrying everything over, all your files, all your stuff. But like she said, it also brings over all the garbage. So those are little fragments of of apps that you've deleted and files that you no longer need and just settings that you might have changed at one point that maybe you want a fresh start. I personally, when I get a new computer, always do a fresh start because it just feels good. It's like spring cleaning. It is frustrating in certain aspects because you do have to go through and think about, oh man, my Wi-Fi always connected to that network. Now you got to type it in again.
Right.
Or I always had that setting. My computer always changed to dark mode at 6 p.m. Oh, I got to go back in. And all these things that you've kind of tweaked over 7 years that have built up, they will all be gone. So that's the downside. The positive side is that you get a fast computer. There's nothing extra there. There's nothing running in the background that you haven't specifically kind of thought about, because you're going to now install all your programs again. You're going to drag over just the files that you need, and you're going to start with settings that are fresh. So you have a chance to kind of see what Apple is presenting you, and you have a chance to kind of lead your computer in the way that you want to and kind of give up that 7 years of whatever you picked, you know, in the moment. You now have kind of a fresh look at everything. I will say the one thing that I change every single time when I first get a brand new Mac or restart it or whatever, you know, refresh it, is the way that Apple tries to force you to, when you pull two fingers down on your trackpad, it actually is reverse. So when you're scrolling, they call it natural scroll.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, for some reason, I've always scrolled with pulling two fingers down. Like, they want to do an opposite. Like, okay, I get it. If you're pushing two fingers up, it's pushing the page up. And if you're pulling them down, it's just reverse. To me, it's anyway. So I always change that setting literally the first thing I ever do when I get a Mac. And then when I go to someone else's computer that has not changed that setting, for instance, producer Megan.
Yeah.
I was on her computer the other day secretly looking at stuff when she left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all do that, right?
Of course. And I went to use her trackpad and I was like, well, I can't do this. It's like, it's totally different. And I wanted to change it for her, but then I was like, no, I don't think it's not my right.
Maybe she does that as like an added security measure.
Yeah.
Like, they got in my computer, but now I'm not going to be able to, now they're not going to be able to navigate.
Rich will not be able to figure out how to scroll. So I think it's great that she's getting a new computer. And I love the fact that she was backing up her old one, because that's very important. But I like the idea of just taking the Saturday morning, grab a cup of coffee, and just, you know, start fresh with this thing. It's a brand new computer. It's always good to have a fresh start, Bobby.
Yeah.
AT&T is putting a new spin on the classic cable TV service you know and hate. They have a new service called AT&T TV, and it's actually not a bad service because it lands squarely between cord cutting and the holdouts of standard cable. When people cut the cord, they all of a sudden go into this frenzy of, like, some people are fine. Like, obviously, like, some people are like, I know what I'm doing, it's great, whatever. Then you have a lot of other people who, kind of like my parents, who are like, well, I do watch the Food Network. How do I get that now? It's like, ooh, you wanted that? Well, you don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. I wanted my local channels. How do you get that? Oh, you can't really get those with, you know, some of the streaming services do have them. Or all these random cable channels. I like to watch Bravo. I like to watch, you know, my news, you know, cable news. Okay, so what AT&T is doing is they are now giving you cable TV service that actually streams through the internet. But it's not your typical streaming app like YouTube TV or all these things. It's called AT&T TV. And when you sign up, they will send you an Android-powered box, a cable box of the future, let's say, which actually uses kind of Google Android on the back end. And so you get your live channels, which are now streaming over the internet. So you plug it into your high-speed internet, and you get your live channels just like you would. It looks like a program grid, everything, except instead of the channels being delivered through coax cable the way they used to, they're just coming over your internet. So it looks the same, but it performs the same, but it's delivered different. It's delivered over IP, internet protocol. But here's the other part that I think some people will like. You also have your apps on the same exact platform. So where you have your local channels and your cable channels, then all of a sudden with one hit of the remote, now you can be watching Netflix. And when it comes to a lot of these other systems, you know, if you have a cable box plus an Apple TV, let's say, you have to switch inputs to flip-flop between those two. Now, there's been a lot of effort made to kind of bridge that gap, and I think that AT&T is doing something here to kind of rescue a portion of their business that they know is going away. And it does appeal to a lot of different people, like my parents who may not be ready. My mom cut the cord. My dad cannot do it. But someone like him, this might be good for, because the price is going to be better than what you get with classic cable, but not by much. So here is the catch to this whole thing, because you're going to be seeing advertising like crazy for this AT&T TV, is the price is really cheap when you start out. Okay. And just like regular cable, and especially if you had like DirecTV, it was super cheap to start. In that second year, the prices went crazy up. And that's what happens with this. So your first year, you can get your TV for $39.99 a month for 12 months. And then you can get high-speed internet, bundle it for $39.99 a month, which sounds amazing, $80 a month for TV and internet. I pay $70 for just internet, and it's way slower than this. But in the second year, the prices jump up like crazy. So the first bundle goes up to $93 a month instead of $50 a month.
Yikes.
So, and I actually did the math on this to see, because it's really tricky. Like, I went on their website and I kind of put all my information in there, which, you know, it kind of took a little bit. And I did like the whole thing, soup to nuts. And I figured out like, how much is this going to cost me over 2 years? Because then you can divide it by 24 months and see how much it actually costs. And if I haven't made this clear, you do have to sign a 2-year contract.
Oh.
So that's why you can't just jump out after the first year. Yeah. So I did the math and here's what I came up with. So the TV was $40 times 12 months for the first year. Then the internet was $50 times 12, because you have to pay a $10 service fee for your box rental. That's $600 plus $480 in the first year. Then the second year, the TV jumps to $93 minimum times 12. And then internet jumps to $70 times 12. So $840. So the total you spend over the 2 years is $2,036.
Oh, man.
Not including any taxes, fees, or regional sports fees, which is another $9 a month.
Right.
So it came out to about $85 a month before all those taxes and fees, which I'm guessing is really about $100 a month. So again, I'm paying $70. So I'm actually, if you look at it that way, you're paying $30 more for TV, which I don't pay for TV right now. I cut the cord.
Yeah.
So I have antenna and that's free. So again, this is really geared towards those, I would call them hesitant cord cutters. They want to see what's on the other side, but they're not ready to give up their cable. This is a good middle ground.
I see. That's good. All right, we have another viewer question here. This is from Gabby. She posted this to your Facebook. She says, "Rich, I am a computer illiterate lady looking for a type of photo stick to upload all my photos. I'm looking at various types. I see one photo stick for mobile phones, another for PC. Is there one for both, or do I need to get two different sticks? I don't want to have to upload to my PC because it's on its last leg, and they, PC and phone, have entirely different photos. I just want to load all my photos from both."
Okay.
So photo sticks.
Photo sticks. This is a tricky one. I get this question a lot, and it's kind of confusing to me, because I really like to back up all my stuff like either to iCloud or to Google Photos. But I guess there's a certain element of folks out there who do not like their stuff living in the cloud. Mm-hmm. They don't trust the cloud. They just don't like it. And I think this falls under that. And so a lot of times I recommend a device, and I think there's a lot of these little photo sticks advertised on Facebook and on Instagram. I don't recommend the one that's advertised. Whatever it is, I forget what the big name is, but it looks very scammy. You go to their website, it starts a timer of like, you only have 10 minutes to get this perfect price or whatever.
For $2.
Yeah. And then, you know, I tried emailing the company. They never emailed me back, which is a bad sign as a journalist. You know, they should at least say, hey, we're not interested in talking to you or sending you a sample so you can try it out. So I wanted to try it.
Sure.
Because if it's fine, I don't mind recommending it. Like, it doesn't have to be from a big name company for me to recommend it. But with all that said, the product that I do like is from a company named SanDisk. And it's called the iXpand, I-X-P-A-N-D. And I have tested this out. It works. It's not perfect, but the reality is it looks like a flash drive. One end plugs into the port on your phone. And in this case, you would get the Android version that would plug into the bottom of her phone. The other side plugs into her computer, which is a standard USB. Mm-hmm. Or if you have an iPhone, it'd be a Lightning and then USB. So the idea is you plug it into your phone, it takes all the pictures off, puts it on this little drive, and then you can plug it in your computer, back them up, whatever, put them on your computer. Or you can take photos from your computer, put them on the drive, consolidate them all. I feel like it's a very messy process. It's not the best thing to do, but if that's what you want to do, it works. So again, I'd recommend the iXpand flash drive. And I'm looking for like a secondary product that I could also recommend that might work similarly. And this actually looks really cool from Leef, L-E-E-F. Mm-hmm. They have a Access-C micro SD reader for USB-C, which means it's kind of like a little flash, a little card reader that plugs into the bottom of your phone.
Yeah.
And then you can plug a card into it, like a micro SD card.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. And then you can just copy all your pictures that way. Yeah. The only problem with this is she's saying she's computer illiterate. It is not that easy on an Android phone to just copy all your pictures onto this directory without knowing what you're doing.
Right.
I'd be able to do it.
Yeah.
But someone that's not as computer savvy is not going to be able to do that, which is why I go back to the SanDisk. Their software will actually help you do that. You download an app, and it says, hey, do you want to back up your pictures? And it will help you do that. Now, with all that said, I think your best case scenario is just download Google Photos on your phone, download it on your computer, have it back up all the photos that it finds on both places and put them into one big library. And I think that's a lot easier. And
yeah,
it's free.
For sure.
So.
Definitely.
All right. Speaking of the iPhone, Apple is going to pay up to $500 million to settle a U.S. lawsuit over slow phones. This is coming from Reuters. This is all over that whole thing where they slowed down phones. Remember this whole thing where it was like they throttled the battery? And Apple made me really mad about this because people would always say to me, Rich, I feel like my phone is slowing down over the years. And I'd always be like, no, it's not your phone that's slowing down. It's actually the software that's getting more complicated and it's making...
The older phones can't keep up.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, that is still true, but it was also true that Apple was slowing down the phones because not to get you... The lawsuit says it's to get you to buy a replacement phone or a replacement battery, but in reality, it was really to make sure that your phone would still perform smoothly because Apple's known for this kind of buttery experience. And so they realized early on, like, hold on, Facebook app is like nearing like 400 megabytes or whatever.
Right.
Like if you're rocking like an iPhone 6, it's going to be really tough for your phone to run that app without crashing. So let's smooth out the experience on this phone so that that app runs better. Mm-hmm. It might close out some of your other apps in the background. It might slow down things like the touch response, but you'll still feel like as an end user that your phone is working nicely, even though things are a little slower. Well, Apple got in a little bit of trouble for that, took a little heat. So they lowered the price of a battery replacement to like, for a while they were doing them for free, I think.
I remember that. There was kind of like when they kind of got caught, quote unquote.
Yeah.
They're like, well, just bring it in. We'll swap it out for free.
Oh yeah. Don't say anything to anyone.
Yeah.
But the batteries used to be $80 to replace. Now they're 30. But I do believe when I was writing my first book that I did write in there that it was totally free. And then the price was going up to 30, you know, after that free grace period or whatever. But your phone had to qualify. Long story short, Apple, it looks like you may have $25 coming your way if you bought an iPhone 6, 6 Plus, you know, any iPhone 6, basically, any iPhone 7, or an iPhone SE.
I think I do. I think I had a 6 or a 6S.
I know I had a 7, Anna.
I had one somewhere. But how do they verify this? Do they just kind of know who their users are? And
It may be where Apple supplies them with a list, or it may be one of those things where you have to, like, you'll get, like, an email, and then you have to, like, sign up, and then 3 years later... You know, you're literally ready to like pack up and move out of LA, and then it's like you get this $25 check. You're like, yes,
I can eat for another week.
So anyway, don't hold your breath for that one, but that is what's happening with the iPhone. Bobby, producer Bobby.
Hi. So we've got another question here from Sherry. This is on your Facebook. She wants to know about the mirror. She says, "Have you seen the mirror?" I have, and I hate what I see in it every day.
You're talking about just your personal mirror.
No, but yeah. She's actually talking about the mirror you put up on the wall, and it's like a live personal trainer. An exercise.
Yeah.
It's like used for exercises. She wants to know your thoughts on that.
Well, there's a couple of these things. So you know Peloton, right?
Yes.
So they kind of unleashed the beast of oh my gosh, people are into fitness at home. Let's figure out what we can do with technology and make everything in the world. So the mirror was one that kind of went viral online, and it basically showed a mirror on your wall, but like a magical mirror that shows you how to work out, and it will give you feedback on like if you're stretching wrong or whatever. It's cool. I have not personally tested this, so I can't tell you whether it's cool or not. What I can tell you is that I think that a lot of these things are going to shake out over the years. Do I think we're going to have magic mirrors in the future that will help us work out? Absolutely. It makes sense. Have a giant screen in your house. You got a trainer on there. They just help you lead you through a workout. They give you some response. We did a story with a website called OpenFit, which is an app that uses your iPhone. And the trainer can actually look through your camera.
I heard about this.
And watch you and give you feedback.
Yeah.
Now, that's probably going to be what's built into this mirror thing as well. So if not, if it's not already, I mean, it may be. But I'm looking at the mirror online. It's at minimum $1,500. That's a lot. Now, if you have an expensive gym membership, maybe that sounds cheaper. But and the Peloton is $2,500, so it's cheaper than that.
Yeah.
But let's be honest right now. This is a first-gen product. I can't imagine. It's probably slick, and I'm sure the viral video was great. But I can't imagine that it's going to be that great first out of the gate, even in the first couple of years out of the gate. This is an expensive product. You're going to put it on your wall. That means you have to mount it. You got to keep it up to date. It probably comes with a monthly fee that you have to pay. And so by the time you add all these things up, I think that this is right now probably best for the early adopters, the really super techie types, and maybe someone who's sharing this with, you know, if they have a little fitness studio or something, they just want to try it out and whatever. But I think for the average person, it's probably not best to invest in this technology just yet.
Just buy a mirror from the store for like $15 and watch YouTube videos, and then you can exercise in front of the mirror for free.
That's the thing. Right? And I think that there's one called Tonal, which I did not actually go and test that, but Megan, producer Megan, did. And she came away impressed, and I have seen this in different places. And so again, you have a lot of these new technologies that are kind of vying for attention. It's going to shake out. You know, they may be acquired. You know, if you're a large company that's a big fitness company, you're not going to let all this stuff go by. You know, you're not going to let it go. Like you're, if you're life cycle or whatever, you're probably doing stuff like this, and you're probably buying some of this. I actually purchased. I saw this at CES, and I went and bought it. The Bowflex version of the Peloton.
Okay.
And the reason I bought it is because the Peloton's $2,500. The Bowflex one, gosh, I forget how much it is total, but it was like, you know, you had to, I'd pay like, you know, the extra service fee for like installation and whatever, but it was like half the price of the Peloton. And the reason why I got it is because there's no service fee every month. You actually put your own iPad where the Peloton screen would be.
Screen. I see.
So you don't have to pay for that giant screen. You don't have to pay for the Peloton. And I thought this was just a great thing at a half the price or less than half to have at home, because now I can do like a 20-minute, 30-minute workout. Now, I bought that like 2 months ago, and I still haven't gotten it. So I don't know what's going on. But they did tell me. They said it was so popular that it's actually sold out. They said it was sold out for at least 45 days.
Oh, wow.
So I've just been waiting to get this thing. And it shows that people do have an interest in alternatives. But again, to answer the question, I think that you kind of wait on a lot of this stuff. The bike that I bought is a standard spin bike, except you have a place for an iPad.
To put an iPad.
So it's not very high tech. It's not very crazy. But if you look at Flywheel, that was an alternative to Peloton, and they went out of business.
Oh.
Or at least their bike did. Whatever happened, they're now, Peloton, I think, sued them, and they're giving those people a Peloton bike. So if you invested in one of these Flywheels, it's okay because you're getting the other bike. But still, it just goes to show that all these new technologies, when they're especially big and expensive,
everyone kind of jumps in, and then you get cheaper versions and versions that don't last, and so it's best to bide your time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm an early adopter of a lot of stuff, but when it comes to a $1,500 one-trick pony mirror that you put on your wall, you probably want to wait a little bit. And like you said, go to YouTube, go to Apple TV, buy an Apple TV for $200, set it up on your TV, and watch videos from YouTube, and you'll probably be okay. For now, or just hire a personal trainer.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't they cheap?
I don't know. Never used one. Don't plan on it.
I actually did when I was in college and doing the whole like stupid credit card debt thing. Yeah. I, you know, when I had, you know, they give you credit cards, and like, of course you stupid, like 17, whatever. You're like, oh, I have all this money.
Yeah.
Like whatever limit you got on that card, that was now how much money you had.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I went to 24-Hour Fitness, and I literally bought a package of like personal training things for like, it probably was like $280 at the time. Uh-huh. But now that I think about it, it felt like it was probably like $1,000, you know, but I have no idea how much it was, but it was more than I could afford on personal training. And I'd go there, and I had this personal trainer that was like an actor, you know? And so he would literally be like, he didn't care about what he was doing, what I was doing. He'd be like, all right, go on the bike for 5 minutes to warm up. I'm like, all right. And I literally did only one of the classes, or maybe two, and that was it. And I wasted all this money.
Wild.
Anyway, that's my only experience with a personal trainer. So anyway, all right, let's talk a little personal assistant, Google Assistant, and Alexa. A couple of new features I want to tell you about. So two on Alexa that are pretty cool. The first, I think, is really convenient, is now you can ask A, I'll say, A, tell me when there's a severe weather alert. And when there's a weather alert in your area, she will chime in and tell you. I think that is an amazing feature. Because if you think about it, I mean, we do have our phones with us all the time. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's kind of cool that just you're in your house. And I get it. In Los Angeles, we don't really have this. But I used to live in Shreveport, Louisiana, where severe weather alerts were actually a thing, where you might have a flash flood, or you might have a tornado, or like heavy, heavy rain that just comes out of nowhere. And so to have that in your living room, and all of a sudden you're watching TV, or maybe, you know, your wife is commuting home and you're like, you know, just waiting there, and all of a sudden you hear this thing like, oh, let me tell them. I mean, it is really cool. Or in the case of tornado, like take cover.
And we just had that big tornado in Nashville that created a bunch of devastation.
Yeah, I mean, it was like at least 9 deaths when I saw it, which is...
Oh, it's grown up to, I think it's in the 20s now.
Oh, my. I mean, it's crazy to think that that happens. But, like, I remember, and here's the thing, like, some people were discussing, like, well, how did they not know that this thing was approaching? You don't know with tornadoes. You know there could be one in your area. You have no idea where it's going to touch down. You have no idea the path, and you have no idea the destruction. They can predict as much as they want, but the reality is it's really tricky.
Yeah.
And I saw this firsthand because, like, I remember going through, you know, as a reporter in Shreveport, we'd go through these neighborhoods that were, you know, where there's a tornado that came through, and you couldn't know with certainty. Now with all the cell phones, you probably would know more than before because there's so many cameras everywhere. But back in the day, it's like, oh, this area, and you could just tell by the way the trees were twisted.
Oh, wow.
If it was actually a twister.
Yeah.
You know, as we call them. Anyway, so that's the Alexa one, which I thought was really cool. So set that up and see how it is. I don't know how well it works, but it's kind of cool. And Google Assistant, meanwhile, on Android, has a really cool new feature that can read any web page. And I tried this morning, and it is just one of those features that is just brilliant. And I personally don't really have a need for this per se, but I think for as an assistive technology, if you have low vision, or if you're losing your vision, or any sort of disability when it comes to that, I think that this is amazing. All you have to say when you're on a web page is, H Google, read this page. And Google Assistant springs into action, and it starts reading the whole page. It'll be like, from the New York Times. It'll say the title, and it'll just start reading the page.
That's
and it
really
reads
cool.
It in a voice that is pretty impressive. Like, you would think it's a robot overlord, how good this thing can... It can read better than I can. Let's put it that way. I mean, seriously.
That's
it
really
sounds
cool,
really good.
Yeah. I mean, we've come such a long way from... Remember on the old PCs, the text-to-speech, and you could type in something, and then...
Yes.
It would read it back in... A weird voice, but now it's like you can't almost not even tell it's actual.
Let me hear. Here we go. This is the
From 9 to 5 Google. OnePlus will now repair your device on your doorstep, but only in India. By Damien Wilde.
OnePlus is really pumping resources and investment into the Indian market with exclusive features for fans and device owners in the region.
So that's it reading.
Really cool.
Okay, now here's another feature that's really cool, and I show this off on my Twitter, at Rich DeMuro. If you are looking at a web page, say, in Spanish, oh, by the way, it will just read it
instead, was
I mean,
in English. So this is some sort of football match, and it's written in a different language. I think it's Spanish.
I mean, do you see what's happening?
And she's just reading it in English in real time, and you can choose what language you want it to be read in. I mean,
that's wild.
Talk about the idea of you stumble upon, and Google Chrome has done this for a long time, but you stumble upon a web page that's written in a different language. And you know how it says, would we like to translate? Just that feature is amazing on your desktop.
Yeah.
But now the fact that anyone can just be on a web page and have it read to them in their preferred language is just, this is the kind of stuff that just is truly amazing. And Google continues to push the envelope with this artificial intelligence and the way that it parses the article. I mean, it read the title, it read who it was from, and then it read the article. Now, I did notice it kind of stumbled when there was an embedded tweet in the article. It kind of read the tweet, which you would do anyway as a human, but it just kind of, it didn't really get that there's a difference
kind of
between.
Kind jumped in there. I see.
Exactly. Okay. Producer Bobby, I think this is your last question.
Oh, last question. Let's make it a good one. Let's see. How about this one from Kim? Kim is asking about job apps. She says there's an increasing issue with finding legit jobs on sites and apps. She keeps getting contacted by people in other countries. She sends her resume. They never contact her. She's an independent contractor. She works in IT field work like migrations, imaging, and installation. And she doesn't think it should be this hard. So she's wondering about any legitimate job apps where she'll have luck and not get weird spammy calls from people.
She really stumbled upon a very good point here. And I don't know if this happens to you with the, because you manage the podcast and every podcast has like an email address on like iTunes that's associated. Yeah. Do you get like a bunch of random emails from time to time?
I do from time to time. I do. I get a lot of weird, it's tough to tell because my podcasts are linked to my work email, and even through our work email, sometimes we get just like weird, weird emails.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did kind of notice an increase of just strange.
It's just strange. And it's tough because we have to kind of go through them and figure out, is this legit?
Yeah.
Is this not legit? I got a couple. I got one yesterday and one today. One yesterday was saying that there was an image on my website that, hey, we love that you're using our image on your website, but that's actually ours, and so you have to pay us for that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because I got that image from Google, so like Google sent it to me, like the press people. And so I was like, that's weird. So I did a little research, and I Googled where this email address came from, and it's totally a shell blog. Mm-hmm. It's totally bogus, and I realized, think about it. They send that automated email to a million people a day. Mm-hmm. And one person goes, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, let me pay, or let me take it down, or let me, you know, fix that.
Or send you money.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just, it's such a brilliant scam. And this is happening. So to get back to her question about the jobs, it's really tough. My dad runs a small business. And so I get his emails for a small business. And it is unbelievable how much spam he gets from people purporting to be Yelp. Hey, let me help you get a better Yelp rating. Mm-hmm. People being on Google. Hey, do you want to be on the first search? We work with Google.
Yeah.
You know, they don't necessarily say they are Google. We work with Google. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And for him, he's running his business. He's busy. Of course he'd like more calls, or of course he'd like more clicks to his website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sometimes he'll respond to these people, and I'm like, no, this is totally bogus. These people are literally just trying to get you on, pay them, give them a credit card fee, whatever it is, and just... So it's the same thing with this job stuff.
Yeah.
It's really tough because you've got to put yourself out there and put your resume and your information to get these leads, especially as an independent contractor, but then you're going to get all the garbage as well. People just slamming you with all kinds of crap that you don't need to, you know, that you shouldn't be taxed with going through, but you have to. And that's kind of the name of the game with the internet, is that you really need to be on your toes. And I actually emailed this person back and asked them if they what they were using, like LinkedIn or you know, whatever. And they said it happens across all these sites. So, and I'm on LinkedIn and I get spammed on there. You know, people just, hey, we saw your article. Can you do a story on this? Now, it looks like it's a pitch, but it's really not. It's just like spam most of the time. So I don't really have good advice, except my main advice is whenever you're writing your email address on these different things, I always write out rich@ktla.com, like the word at, A-T, and then KTLA, and then dot.com. And the reason I always send that whenever I'm typing out my email address to someone or putting it on a website or sending it through a message is that if there's a spider out there that's crawling for email addresses, it's going to be a little bit trickier for them to figure out that's my email address.
That's a good little tip.
And I don't mind. Like I said, I just gave it out on here. I don't care if you email me because a human has to listen to that now and say, oh, I'm going to email Rich. That's fine. But if it's now, if a transcript of this makes it out somewhere, it's going to say, you know, rich@ktla.com. And that doesn't mean as much to a spider.
Right.
Now, these spiders might have gotten more sophisticated and maybe it does mean more. And so I just kind of gave... No, I'm just kidding. But I think that's kind of my best advice, is really just protect your personal information. You have to put it out there to be on these sites, but just protect it as best you can. So that's a good question. Okay, real quick, because I did tease this, and I want to mention this story before we go, but this just blew my mind. This company, Wolfcom 10, did an exclusive with the kind of showing what technology they are selling to police departments. And the bottom line is, it is that Terminator technology where when they're looking at someone through their police cam, it circles the person's face, scans against a database of known offenders, and identifies, says like, outstanding warrant, wanted for felony, missing person. And so you can see how this could be good for the missing person thing, but if you're the person with the outstanding warrant
or
the wanted felony, I mean, look at that.
That's crazy.
But this is the future.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no doubt with facial recognition, it is going to be the Wild West.
Yeah. It's like RoboCop.
It's like, that's the word I was looking RoboCop, not Terminator. I guess Terminator did something similar.
Yeah, they do it too. It's all those kind of...
But if you look at this, the little video link is just phenomenal, and it's just... It's wild, but it's the reality of what's happening. It's already happening with license plates. Mm-hmm. As police are driving through cities, their cars are scanning license plates, and it's like, oh, flag that one, flag that one. That one's a stolen car. That one's a...
There was just a story that we had the other day. I don't remember what the crime was, but that's how they caught the guy, was just a officer driving along in his car. Boop, boop, boop. There's a license plate that we've been looking for. And
but
that's
just extrapolate that onto everything.
Yeah.
I mean, faces and just... It's just... It's so wild. I mean, I love it in certain extents because it does make our world safer, but it's also really scary because the implications of used to be you could evade things a little bit. And I'm not saying people should evade the cops if they're wanted or whatever, but it used to be like there was some work involved. Mm-hmm. But it always goes back to this example that I had as a kid. I always thought in the future when you sped on a freeway, what's going to keep technology from knowing that your car is speeding, reporting that to the law enforcement, and outspits a ticket from your dashboard. Mm-hmm. What is keeping us from having that? Nothing right now.
Yeah.
Your car knows how fast you're going. So does Google Maps. So does your GPS.
Phone, everything
your
inside phone. Of it. Yeah.
So what's the only thing keeping that from happening is that nobody's implemented that.
Right.
Now, do we need laws against that? I don't know, because what's the rule about speeding? Is it only when you're caught that you get the ticket? Or is it that, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's these kind of things that technology will enable us to do, but should we do them?
Science fiction is science reality now.
Exactly. You said it. You said it very well, producer Bobby. Oh my gosh, can you believe it? That's going to do it for this episode of the show. If you want links to what we talked about, you can take a look at the show notes. And if you have a question for me, you can go to richontech.tv, hit that contact button. And we would appreciate it if you rate and review this podcast. It helps other people discover it. Just go to ratethispodcast.com/richontech and just put in your little review. Producer Bobby, tell folks how they can find you and your podcast.
They can find me on Instagram. I'm at SoundsLikeBobby, and all our podcasts are at ktla.com/podcast. I do Spoken Dreams. You can find that on the website or on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Stitcher, everywhere that you find this podcast. You can find all our KTLA podcasts as well.
And thanks for that. I'm looking at some of the reviews, and Tony the Great One said, wow, one of the greatest tech guys out there, an absolute must listen to. Even if you're not tech savvy, he explains it in English. Kudos to you, Rich. Thanks for all that you do. That would probably be better if you read that, Bobby.
Right. A little self-congratulatory, but hey.
That's okay.
It's all good.
Thanks so much for doing this, Bobby. I do
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. I'm Rich DeMiro. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you real soon.